Welcome to Tech Policy Podcast. My name is Ash Kazarian. I'm one of the legal fellows and temporary hosts. Today, we're going to discuss the Fourth Amendment and how it protects American citizens from unwarranted searches and seizures, and how far does it extend? There is a case that is going to be heard at the Supreme Court named Carpenter versus United States that seeks to determine an answer to that question. Joining us, we have Kurt Levy, President of Committee for Justice, and Ashley Baker, Director of Public Policy there. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So let's start by just tell us a little bit about what does your nonprofit do?
Well, our overall mission is promoting constitutionally limited government, and holding politicians accountable to the Constitution, including its limits. And this is a classic case of it, the one we're about to discuss. Carpenter and the Fourth Amendment in general are really about, you know, how much power does the federal government have to invade your privacy in the name of law enforcement or preventing terrorism?
Let's then get to it. What is Carpenter versus United States? Tell us more about the background of the case, how it got up to the Supreme Court.
Well, I can answer that question. This is a criminal case. A number of men were convicted of robbing cell phone stores, and the way that they were proven guilty is through the use of cell phone location data. If it's not obvious, your cell phone provider basically knows where you are anytime you have your phone on. You don't even have to be doing anything. Your phone is constantly connecting with the appropriate cell. And, you know, depending on whether it's a broad cell or a narrow cell, they might know where you are within, a few hundred feet or, dozens of feet, but they basically know where you are. And they were able to show that Carpenter and his co-defendants were at the site of the robberies.
And isn't it a little bit ironic that they were robbing?
Yes.
They were stealing cell phones. So they're stealing cell phones. And another thing I was going to point out is just the massive amount of data that was collected. And I think that's something that's really important in these cases. So in this case, one request for data from a third party provider, let's say a cell phone company, yield in this case is 127 days worth, and that 127 days worth had 12,898 separate points of location data.
So let's slow this down. So law enforcement went to the judge, went to a magistrate judge.
No, because it's a subpoena.
Yeah, so they got a subpoena for all of this records.
Under the Stored Communications Act.
Yes, under the Stored Communications Act.
To be fair, subpoenas can be challenged if you have notice of them. But in this case, it's only the cell phone companies that had notice, and they don't really have a lot of interest in challenging it, except in particular cases. We can talk about cases in which they don't want to turn over the data. But Mr. Carpenter had no notice, so he had no idea that this data was being collected on him and used
in the prosecution against him.
Right. Yes. To be fair, well, at some point he knew it existed, but he didn't know it in time to object. And some people will say, "Well, how's that different from a warrant? You don't have notice of a warrant either." But warrants are subject to you go before a magistrate or a judge. And you have to meet fairly stringent requirements about probable cause and particularity of what you're going to search for. So in a sense, that provides the review up front as compared to you having to know about it and challenge it.
And another way, Ashton, to kind of simplify that and get back to your point earlier would be, it's kind of easy to notice if a law enforcement official is searching your car. It's a lot harder to know if they're searching your data. So it's, the Constitution protects against both searches and seizures. And in this case, when the seizure kind of constitutes the search and the person doesn't know until usually in some cases, a pretty long period of time after the search actually occurs, that's where, one of the problems lie.
Okay, so a lot has been written about this case, and a lot of scholars have weighed in. And the term that comes up a lot is a third-party doctrine. Do you mind explaining to our listeners what it is?
Sure. I mean, the third-party doctrine basically says that Fourth Amendment rights are not involved here, because it's completely, you know, because it doesn't involve, the only person who has Fourth Amendment rights here is Carpenter, but they're not getting the data from Carpenter. They're not demanding it from him. They're
certainly
not searching
his house. So the third party is the cell phone company.
Exactly. And, you know, the analogy is made to that, for example, let's suppose, you know, I commit a crime and I tell you about it and you tell the police. That's my tough luck. So they analogize the cell phone provider to, you know, a witness or somebody that I tell about a crime. And that's a really bad analogy because it's completely voluntary that I tell you if I've committed a crime. This is not voluntary in a couple of ways. One, you really can't go through life at this point without a cell phone. I mean, I suppose you could barely survive, but you can't really function in the modern world. And two, once you have a cell phone, it's not like you even really have to do anything. It's not like you even have to make a phone call, just having the phone on, such that, you know, most Americans, I think, would be surprised to know that their location is being recorded at all times.
Even if all of your location services are turned off, kids.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
As long as your phone is connected to a cell provider, you're getting tracked.
Exactly.
Yeah, because your phone can't work. A cell phone can't work unless it's communicating with a cell tower.
And to, you know, reiterate what Kurt said about, you know, these days it's really hard to live without a cell phone. I mean, it's pretty much impossible. I think in Raleigh versus California, Chief Justice Roberts said that 12% of Americans have admitted to using the cell phone in the shower. So if you can't, you know, shower without your cell phone, then it's a bit difficult to otherwise, you know, you shouldn't have to opt out of modern society in order to enjoy the protections of the Fourth Amendment.
Right. And, you know, they, you know, unlike, say, even the Jones case where the court excluded evidence based on a GPS being attached to the defendant's car. Here, again, it's not just when you're in your car. It's even when you're home. You know, again, depending on the cell tower, they can tell where you are in your house. And as we go towards the Internet of Things, you know, where everything's
communicated. My Apple Watch has cellular, so I don't even have to have my phone with me when I go on a run. They can track me, where I'm going, what time I'm going, like, up, like, very precise location. They can pin down any individual. So
and
guys,
it's going to get worse, I should add, because A, they're better, getting better and better at pinpointing where you are, and more things are connected to the internet. So, you know, they'll know very soon, you know, what you're eating from, you know, what you're refrigerators communicating.
Right. One thing about this case, too, is that it does have implications potentially for later technologies such as Internet of Things or, you know, current technologies other than cell phone location data. And especially with the Internet of Things, you kind of connect to things, you know, unwittingly, and you share data, and it's even less conscious than, you know, having your phone in your pocket or having, you know, your Apple Watch on your wrist.
Yeah, and it's not only your location data, it's your health data, it's your heartbeat, it's all of this private information that we can do dozens of podcasts on, and we probably will. So how was the Fourth Amendment analysis in Carpenter, including the third-party doctrine that we just discussed, affected by the technological progress that we were discussing? You guys mentioned the Riley case, the Jones case, that both were heard in the Supreme Court. It looks like it's a very nice progression up and development?
Yeah. I think, you know, I've sort of been pleasantly surprised. You know, the justices are, for the most part, pretty old and not that tech savvy, and yet they seem to get that we can't just allow legal doctrines that were developed in a time without cell phones and many other technologies. We can't just apply them blindly to the new world. Again, if you look at the cases from which the third-party doctrine derives, involving bank records and involving regular phone calls, you know, that's a lot less intrusive than knowing where you are at all moments. And you know what? In this case, the defendant isn't even saying that you can't see any of my cell phone location data. They say it has to be, again, given a reasonable expectation of privacy. People might expect that the police, you know, if you sort of go by reasonable expectations of privacy have been established over decades, people always knew the police could be tailing me. They might know where
but
I am for a few hours.
But police is not 24/7
it's not 24/7 for 4 or 5 months.
They take bathroom breaks. Yeah. They go out for donuts. They get coffee. And so, yes, absolutely, our expectation of privacy has developed as all of this technology that is very helpful, but at the same time kind of comes into our private world has emerged.
So, I think even the justices at their age realize, if you look at, you know, some of the recent cases, realize that there has to be some adoption of the doctrine. And of course, the third party doctrine, as you can tell from the fact that it's called a doctrine, is not actually in the Fourth Amendment. So the Supreme Court invented it. I mean, I've always had problems with the third party doctrine, frankly, because it just seems sort of like a technical end run that the government can't do something, but they can just ask someone else to do something.
You know, and if we're currently debating whether or not a certain piece of technology should be exempt from a doctrine, maybe there's a bigger problem with the doctrine itself.
So you guys mentioned the Stored Communications Act and the subpoena that was obtained under it. Is it up to date? Do we need to update it? Is there some congressional action that should be taken here?
You know, why don't we just leave it at saying that, you know, Congress
has an opportunity to revise privacy law.
But you never know what Congress is going to do. And in any case, you know, the defendant is not asking for the court to completely strike down the third party doctrine. The court is just asking it to limit it enough that they can't get, you know, half a year of where you were at every moment of your life.
As you said earlier, this is kind of, you know, represents a step forward. So although, as Kurt said, they're probably not going to strike down the third party doctrine anytime soon, the fact that the court is like finally starting to grapple with this.
They're chipping away at it slowly.
Yeah, exactly.
And taking into account this case law development that we were just discussing, and the fact that we have a new Supreme Court justice who has a strong record on Fourth Amendment. You said you want Carpenter to win. What would be your bet? What would be your prediction on the outcome of this case?
Gorsuch is definitely principled when it comes to his Fourth Amendment views. He does apply the law equally to everyone, no matter how sympathetic or in some cases unsympathetic the client is. The petitioner, not the client. You scratch that part. And he's written opinions in cases that kind of range from, you know, a libertarian who had signs surrounding their house, do not trespass signs, to, you know, someone who was found carrying child pornography, to someone who was a suspect for shooting down a police helicopter. So he really applies the law equally there. And he's also indicated in one of his cases on the Tenth Circuit, United States versus Ackerman, that he was at least willing to reconsider the third-party doctrine. That's not to say for sure how he would rule on that, or, you know, if he wants to strike it completely, but the fact that he is there recognizing that this has become a major problem and one that the court needs to address soon is really promising.
This term for the Supreme Court seems to be pretty tech-heavy compared to a few previous ones. What are other important cases you guys would want to highlight for our listeners?
Certainly the Microsoft case.
That's Microsoft versus Ireland?
Yeah. Well, now versus U.S. So, I forget, is it U.S. v. Microsoft?
So this case came to us from Ireland came to U.S. courts.
Case.
Yes.
Same case. And involving the same act, Stored Communications Act. In this case, there was a warrant. So that's not the issue here. The issue here is extraterritoriality. Now, the Stored Communications Act dates back to, I believe, 86. And at that time, you know, barely anyone had a cell phone, for one thing. The internet was not something most people accessed. And to the extent that it did exist, there wasn't really the issue of, you know, my email is being stored in Ireland rather than the U.S. So I think everyone concedes that when Congress wrote that, it was thinking about, it was, you know, probably assuming, you know, that your data would be stored in the U.S. And so the issue of extraterritoriality was not even addressed. And it needs to be addressed now. And again, Congress is, there's a variety, I won't bore people by getting into the details, but there's a variety of solutions in you know, whether you apply the same rules or different rules when it's overseas. Should they not be able to reach it overseas at all? Should it depend whether, you know, the person who owns the data, in this case, the, you know, the Hotmail user, you know, is a U.S. citizen, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a lot of balancing of policy concerns here that, in this case in particular, really can only be done by Congress. So, you know, what Microsoft is basically saying in this case is not, no way, we'll never give you data from server in Ireland, but just that there's always been a presumption against extraterritoriality in the law that should apply here until Congress amends the statute. And, you know, the court should issue a narrow ruling that leaves plenty of room for Congress to amend the statute. Ideally, they should rule for Microsoft. And, you know, after, you know, in the future, after Congress amends the act, then, you know, this issue won't arise again. But even if they rule for the government, it should be a narrow ruling that does not really stomp on Congress. And I think Congress understands, you know, maybe unlike some other tech cases, I think Congress understands that extraterritoriality is an issue it's going to have to address.
Ashley, any other cases you find interesting and think we should keep an eye on?
Certainly oil states. That doesn't necessarily involve technology. It's a patent case, but as you probably know these days, there's a very strong intersection between technology and patents. And that's basically a separation of powers case. You've always been able to challenge the validity of an already existing patent, but you had to do it through the courts. Congress, in a you know, probably misguided attempt to make the system more efficient, gave the USPTO, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the right to invalidate patents. And the problem with that is that it really reduces intellectual property to a lower status. Generally, if the government wants to take your property, it has to go to court. The idea that, you know, an administrative agency can take your property, you know, A, I think is wrong in its own right, but B, really is making a statement that intellectual property kind of isn't real.
A real property.
Yeah. And that's a bad signal to send.
I see. Well, is there anything else you guys want to mention about the Carpenter case or think that is important to highlight?
Well, there's a couple more that might, you know, there's still time to grant cert. And, you know, the court might grant the, now I'm trying to remember the name of the case. Rios. The Rios case is very similar to Carpenter, and yet the court still has it, is still holding it over. So it may decide that it wants to, as it often does, you know, decide two cases at once in order to have sort of more factual situations to play with. And then there's the Mohammed case, which is really the first legal challenge to Section 702 of FISA. In Mohammed, the issue is really whether, you know, when the government under FISA is monitoring communications between people outside the United States, it incidentally picks up conversations with Americans. And the question is whether there are some checks on the government's use of that incidental information, but the question is there a Fourth Amendment right not to have the government use that information? If so, what should the standard be? And I wouldn't be surprised to see the court take that one.
And to kind of sum up what would be a desirable outcome on, you know, the privacy front in both Congress and the Supreme Court over, you know, for the remainder of this year, beginning of next year, would, for, you know, privacy advocates and civil libertarians, would be to have a favorable ruling in Carpenter, which might be narrow, but also to have Congress, you know, pass the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. There is a Modernization Act, and it hasn't been modernized since 1986, so it's, you know, well overdue. We shouldn't have a piece of legislation that's intended for our emails applying to, you know, the data cloud.
Yeah. Whether we're talking about Carpenter, in which case it would be modernizing the CPA, or we're talking about the Microsoft case, where it's the International Communications Privacy Act that's being considered. You know, one way or another, they have to really update the statutes. Otherwise, they're forcing the courts to rule on things that they probably don't have the competency to rule on, and where there's really so many policy considerations that it's just not even an appropriate subject for a broad ruling by courts.
I recently heard Justice Gorsuch say judges wear robes, not capes, in America.
That's a great line.
Yes.
And hopefully with Justice Gorsuch on the court now, the there will be a cert petition granted, in the future after Carpenter, so we can, take another step forward and finally striking down the third party doctrine.
Great. Well, thank you guys for joining us. We're going to link to your amicus brief, and we're going to link to your website so people can find out more about all the great work you guys do. We hope you enjoyed the show and are more aware of your privacy and your Fourth Amendment rights. Thank you for joining us.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.